Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. We've got a special episode for you this week as you guys in here in the United States are celebrating Thanksgiving. We're recording this the Tuesday before, but this episode will come out Thanksgiving morning. So first off, happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there. I know some of you are probably working a shift or two today, and so I just want to thank you for all you guys are doing for your communities, and hopefully you get some time with your family at some point. Anyway, we want to jump on into our episode tonight, and of course, to do that, we've got to bring in Sam. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. So I guess it's still pretty cold on your end of the world, huh?
It's getting colder, actually. We've got a front coming in, and I know we don't have any weather guys tonight, so I'll just say that we've got some cold weather coming. But it's going to be clear and chilly on Thanksgiving Day, which is good because that means I don't need the extra freezer or ice chest space. I can just put stuff in the garage, which is always handy.
That always works. Is it cooling down in Memphis, Dr. Joe Hawley? You can unmute now, Joe.
We'll just put stuff out of the patio just like that. But yeah, it's cooling down some here in Memphis as well.
And Joe has a snoring dog next to him, so he's muting when we're not talking. We also have our friend Kevin Ryder from Texas. How's the weather down there, Kev?
It's warm, but I'm about to go to Jamie's neck of the woods for the holiday. So it's going to be in the low teens, from what I understand, for the next couple of days. And I'm not looking forward to it.
It'll remind you why you moved.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we thought we'd have some fun tonight, especially as this is posted on Thanksgiving, considering the idea of thanks. So I was sitting there this morning thinking, gee, we all have those stories that we were really thankful they happened, and we're very thankful about the outcome, whatever it might be. So I threw this up on Facebook thinking, maybe there's some people that would like to contribute some stories. And then I got to thinking that would actually make a good book, but that's down the road. So, you know, that's kind of where we're going tonight, just kind of randomly talking about things we remember from our careers that we were thankful for. So Kevin said he had one, so I'm going to start out with him.
I do, and I actually have obviously a censored card that goes with it. I don't remember all of the details, but I remember it was a young child, and she was sitting at home on the couch with her parents watching TV, and she had her first ever anxiety attack, and the call came in for a child with difficulty breathing. And a long story short, kind of recognized what it was, and I just made her laugh. And on the entire way to the hospital, I was making her laugh by making fun of me and just being me and just making jokes. And her mother was laughing. She was laughing. She had no problems breathing. And it was great. And they thanked me, and we dropped them off, and that was it. And a few weeks later, we got a card. And it was the little girl who wrote a card and thanked me for making her laugh. And even though she was nervous and in an ambulance and on the way to the hospital, but it had a good outcome, and that was pretty cool. So the times that it pays off to be to make fun of yourself and make people laugh doing it, and it makes them feel better. But it was cool. And it was really cool to get the card in the mail, because we don't really get very many of them that I know of. But just, you know, taking her writing the card, thanking, you know, the person who made her laugh, that was pretty awesome. And that kind of made my year.
You're right. Those are pretty rare, and it's really cool when you do get one. I don't know if that's probably a great therapy for anxiety. Not so sure about asthma, but for anxiety. So I was thinking of one that goes back to actually the beginning of my career, and yes, I will date myself here. Around the mid-80s, as you probably know, there weren't a whole lot of women in EMS. And the ambulance company I worked for had a lot of fire department contracts for paramedic services, but I couldn't do most of them because I'm a female. And back then, they could get away with doing that. So I was lucky enough, however, after just getting out of medic school, that I went into a 911 contract area and had some really good out-of-the-box training and one of the best partners I've ever had. So, you know, I got pretty good pretty quickly. Well, then an opportunity came up that I kind of forced to work out of a fire station as a contract medic. And I won't go through the long story of what I had to do to make that happen. But I was still new at it. And we get a call out one day for a hazmat. Well, that's not unusual because this was like the hazmat capital of the world. It was an all-industrial city. So we go out to this thing, and it, myself and my partner, and I, you know, fortunately, we had an extra guy that day who happened to be just out, you know, doing some training. He was a licensed medic, but he was riding along with us. So we stood there and directed traffic for a while, and then we hear the BC calling and saying, hey, come on in. We need you to evaluate this guy. Well, this is when I first learned that hazmats can actually be carried in the back of, at least at the time, you know, FedEx or UPS or one of the carriers without them even being labeled or knowing what it is. Well, it happens this one had was one of those cases, and it had started leaking, and this driver had been exposed to it for God knows how long, and so we got out the ERG, and it said potentially fatal if inhaled. So we decided, we evaluated and transported and thought, okay, we're good. Well, we had the one medic unit for four engines, and our only backups were EMT units. So we called a couple of those in and had everybody packaged and ready to go with the idea that my partner and I would both go in ambulances and the other guy would drive our ambulance, our rescue ambulance. Well, right about the time we're getting to leave, the BC comes up and says, Sam, I need you. Okay. So it turns out, you know, fortunately, that our rescue ambulance wasn't going to be carrying a patient. But I forgot an important point here. There was more than one because when the truck parked where it parked to deliver, it parked right next to an air conditioning intake to another business. So the BC says, we got about seven people in this building that are complaining of everything from chest pain to shortness of breath. And I'm going, oh, gee whiz. Well, this is before we got the ambulances there. So I said, okay, grab any firefighter you can that knows how to use a stethoscope. Drag my partner in there. Now, my partner's brand new, just got out of school, had never even had an MCI. And, of course, this is back in the Mother May I days when you have to call base for everything. So I said, well, get on the phone, and we'll start feeding you information on what we got here. So we do that. We get everybody loaded up and ready to go, like I said, with the idea that my partner and I would both be in a separate ambulance and the other guy would drive the rescue in, right? Wrong. So the BC comes back over and says, Sam, I need you again. Okay. So I follow him to our rescue ambulance, and I look in the back, and another battalion chief is back there with the look, and you all know what the look is. He's pale, cool, diaphoretic, and looking nasty. And the other VC looks at me like, what do you want to do here? You want me, anything you want me to do? I says, yeah, get my partner out of that bus, get the other guy in it, get him over here, because we're going to the hospital. So fortunately, the logistics kind of worked out on that. So I get in the back, and he's hypotensive. And, you know, his EKG's all over the place. And so my partner gets in there. I said, haul bananas to the closest ER. So the chest pain didn't really hit until he got there, fortunately. But, you know, back then we gave fluids for everything. So I said, I got to get an IV on this guy because that's the only way we could give meds back then anyway. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm brand new out here. I'm the only female that's ever walked into this fire station and stayed more than a couple hours. There was also only one female cop in the whole city. So I'm thinking, I never even met this BC before. Now I've got to treat him for an MI. So, you know, not only my reputation, but my career is kind of in the balance here. So I'm getting ready to start this line and go, oh, please, let me get this IV. Well, I did. got him to the hospital. But then we didn't hear anything for weeks, and I'm going, God, you know, I didn't hear much from, you know, did we do good or not, or haven't heard anything. And then one day he walks on the station with a apple pie. I went, oh, my career is saved. Thank you for letting me get that IV. So, you know, it was one of those, you know, worst case scenario days, but it turned out to be pretty good. So that's my story. Joe, what do you got?
Well, I think that sort of reminded me of one of those right place, right time kind of deals. And I was actually lucky enough just on this last deployment to Mexico City to have two of those. And we actually talked about it just in the last month or so of the lady that had the terribly swollen tongue and the airway obstruction that we happened upon stuck in traffic while we were trying to get into Mexico Beach. And then the next day, a gentleman that was right there in the neighborhood where we set up our camp who sort of got overheated and had a hypotensive episode and had some chest pain with it. And we just happened to be right there to take care of him. So, you know, I think what's a bit unique about that for me is that so often in disaster medicine, you know, it takes a long time to get to patients. It takes a long time to treat and extricate them and then sort of do something with them, disposition them in some sort of way. And it's always nice to, you know, feel like you really made a difference and be able to actually see the difference. And I think in both those cases, we were able to do that. And it really made me think about the guys that are currently working in Paradise City that are still on, you know, a search and rescue mission, although at this point it's all recovery. And literally, you know, sifting through ash, looking for human remains of the many folks that are still missing there, and how difficult that job must be, and just feeling really thankful for an opportunity to make a difference and be able to actually see that, as opposed to what those guys are having to deal with, which is much more difficult work and much more difficult to appreciate the immediate feedback and know that you made a difference, even though they are.
Well, and of course, this whole idea for me was inspired by the stories I keep seeing about those nurses we discussed last week that brought these patients, threw them in vehicles, and took them to a garage that they happened to find. And they weren't sure whether they were going to get out, but they were damn well going to take care of those patients with them, and they did. And somebody put up an article today that showed a lot of different pictures of the rescuers coming in and extricating everybody, and the nurses working a lot. He said they actually took on roles of firefighters and you know, rescue roles they aren't generally in.
Oh, yeah.
To take care of business.
Well, what happened, the lead ambulance, I think one of its tires caught fire and started to, like, smolder, and the ambulance stopped, and they were like trying to figure out how to evacuate the other ambulance, and then so this line of vehicles was stopped by the lead ambulance, and a local fire chief or assistant chief happened to be there in an SUV and pointed to this single house in this entire neighborhood that was not burning and said, get everybody in there. Our only choice is to shelter in place, which we talk about all the time, right? And then they broke in, got the women and the babies and the other patients they had with them inside. And then he said, and I saw the live video interview with this guy, and he said, I told them that if they listened to me and followed my instructions, we could keep this house from catching fire. And it just amazed me, his presence of mind to say, I've got to turn these four EMTs and a group of nurses in scrubs into firefighters on the fly. And so they found garden tools and whatever they could locate, brooms and everything else from the house. And they started sweeping the pine needles away from the home. Somebody got on the roof with a garden hose and started wetting down the roof and the sides of the building from up there. And that's what they did for the next 2 hours while the fire swirled all around them. And they managed to save the house and the people inside. And you know, if you want to have something to be thankful for, I think we can be thankful for good training, calm thinking in a crisis by that chief and by those nurses, and, you know, just some amazing tales of heroism in the midst of some really horrible things that were going on around that community. Those are the types of things I'm thankful for, is to hear about the people that are in my line of work doing the things that they do day in and day out and turn out these amazing stories.
Oh, absolutely. And those are, I'm glad you filled that in, Jamie, because those are parts of the story I hadn't heard about the battalion chief. I knew there was an issue with an ambulance, but, you know, when I looked at the pictures, there were lots of patients, and I thought, how could they have gotten them all in private vehicles? Now it's all kind of making sense. But, you know, these people have to, and as it turns out, whoever owns that house is thankful, because it's the only one in paradise still standing. So,
well,
you know.
And so the woman in that house had just given birth in the same hospital a couple months before, and one of the nurses recognized the name on the mailbox and found her on Facebook and sent her a private message while they were fighting the fire around the home, and said, "Is this your house? We're using it to save people's lives. We hope we can make it work." And so they actually interviewed that woman on the TV too. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Wow. That's amazing.
Kidding me? Wow. So I'm seeing a made-for-TV movie here. amazing.
We talk about the stuff that goes on, and it really is, truth is stranger than fiction. We run into people coming up with novel solutions to big problems all the time in our line of work. And we talk about the need to improvise and the need to be semper gumby, right? To always be flexible. Yeah. And this is a perfect example of that where, you know, in a perfect world, I mean, Joe, you can attest to this. In what situation do you do in a training evolution where you tell a chief officer you're by yourself, you've got two ambulances with nurses, four EMTs, and a couple of cars, and a bunch of pregnant ladies or ladies who've recently delivered babies? What do you do?
Yeah, Run away.
You make those scenarios up and they look at you like you've got, you know, three heads and that you're writing a movie script. And you know, we say that frequently. And then literally the next week, there's a scenario that's even more bizarre and outlandish than we were just talking about, you know. So it's having the wildfire going on while there's an earthquake. And it's like, well, that's absurd. That would never happen. You know, so let's have a wildfire during an earthquake and a tornado all at the same time. You know, just because as soon as you say it can never happen that way, it happens more bizarrely than that. It's just the nature of the beast, I think, for disaster medicine in general.
Well, here's one that I can tag onto that, Joe. My first MCI, 1986, in Cerritos, California, an Aeromexico jetliner got hit by a Cessna, because the guy in the Cessna had an MI. Both planes came down. 265 lives were lost, and it took out an entire neighborhood. LA County Fire, which was located south of us, was having a disaster drill. And can you imagine the battalion chief walking in there and saying, "Hey, guys, we got two planes down, and one of them's like a major jetliner." And they're going, "Yeah, chief, come on now." No, really. It turned out to be more a firefighting incident, because the few people that were running away with injury, our ambulances came from the north with another fire department and picked them up and took them off, and then there was nobody else there to save, unfortunately. But you can imagine what those guys thought when the VC came in and said, "We have not one but two planes down." Really? So, you know, that was another thing to be thankful for, the fact they had all those extra assets at that station in that city training at the time. So they were put into service right away. Just that was pretty amazing. Kevin, I think about all your water rescue stuff. You probably have a story or two.
Actually,
out of there.
Joe had a comment, I think. Joe?
Oh, Joe, do you?
Well, I was thinking along the same lines, Sam. You know, we were doing a FEMA medical specialist class here in the Memphis area, And midway through that class had a tornado that several tornadoes actually around the Memphis area that caused some pretty substantial damage, had a few fatalities. And literally during the course of that event, several of the instructors, you know, hopped on a fire vehicle and made a response to a collapsed structure where we had, you know, seven or eight rescues. You know, right in the middle of a class on search and rescue. So the same kind of thing, you know, just you'd never expect that group of people to all be there together. And yet here you are with, you know, 40 folks ready to go to work with all their gear and sitting on go, honestly.
Yeah, we had the same thing happen. We were doing a joint training for three SAR teams, and in the middle of it, the ball dropped, and a half a mile away, I'm not going to disclose all of the details, but somebody went missing, and we were like a half a mile away, and we all showed up like that quick, and they couldn't get over it. I don't want to say anything else. Because, yeah, but it made the papers and it was pretty cool. It was pretty good. Yeah. I'm sure we've all been on something training and something real has happened and you drop what you're doing and you take care of it.
Yeah. I was teaching a PHTLS class once, with my ambulance company, and, in an adjacent city, they had a huge pipe blow up. Killed several people that were in or around it, and that was like a mega MCI, several burn patients. And so I get called out and said, we kind of need those guys. So I went back in. Some were on duty, some were off duty. I said, all right, everybody in a uniform or can procure one, go get in a bus. You're going out to this thing. So just another situation. Hey, we're here talking about trauma. Well, here's your practical experience. You're going to get to go out and take care of some of that. So I guess there's, you know, like you were saying earlier, Jamie, you tell one story and it reminds you of something else. And it sounds like that's more common than we realize, that you're in a training scenario and suddenly there's a real event there.
Well, and part of that, I think, because we train so much and it's important that we do so. You know, I know in my area, there's a monthly training night that everyone gets together, and it's, you know, it's the same time every month, and, you know, goodness gracious, there's always going to be calls going on. So when there's a motor vehicle accident and you just happen to be pulling the rescue out to work on cutting a car up, well, guess what? you get to take that practical experience that you were going to work on and actually put it into practice in real life. And I've seen that happen numerous times. But I think it's important that we do train as much as we do and do all the things that we do to be prepared. Because then when the crazy stuff happens, we have at least have a framework from which to jump from. You know, that experience, even if it's not completely related, is something we can draw on to adapt to the current situation.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to collect more of these stories. And a few people out there, one of our meteorologists said she has one, and I'm sure the other one does as well. So we're going to have more of these because I think, you know, it's good experiential training for us that other people can learn from, I hope. So I think this is a good thing. And like you said, Jamie, it's nothing better than training. Joe, have you ever been in a situation when you're doing a Paragon training where anything's happened?
Yeah, we have. You know, we've had a couple of those. Some of them are, you know, I don't know if reached the level of a disaster type scenario as much as just a, you know, a major incident on a highway or, you know, a big fire breaks out. And, you know, a lot of the folks that are either attending as students or they're instructing, you know, feel the need to break away and go make a response because that's what we do. So it's a pretty common occurrence, strangely enough.
So it would appear. Well, It's one of those things that just shows that, you know, those people you're talking about, Jamie, it's a, you know, kind of a trial by fire, but you just learned it. Well, you might as well use it.
And you know, there's a couple of things that, you know, we can continue talking about this and cover a lot of different stories that we each have. But one of the things that you did that I thought was pretty cool today was to leave a comment or start a thread about this in our Facebook group. So one of the things I'm super thankful for is our community here at the Disaster Podcast, and especially those over on the Facebook group. So find that thread that Sam started, and let's start talking about things we can share, and maybe we can put together an episode or a collection of short segments that we can put together into a whole episode where we do some interviews with some of our members out there and our members of our audience that could share some of their thankful experiences or some of their moments in their careers that really shaped a direction for them in a certain way. I think that that's important for us to remember how we got to where we are now, because I certainly didn't realize where I was going to end up when I first started saying, hey, I think I'm going to join the local volunteer fire company and give back to my community a little bit. And here I am 16, 17 years later with all the myriad of experiences, the wonderful friendships I've had, just so many things that have changed because of that one decision. And so I think that it'll be great to hear from everybody in our Facebook group. And Joe, I know, you know, our relationship with Paragon, I can still remember that first dinner we had out in Las Vegas and where the Disaster Podcast came to life that night. Just how much of a chance occurrence that was.
No kidding. It's just a bunch of passionate people that got together and said, let's do this. And sure enough, we did this. And we're still doing this 5 years later. It's crazy.
Going into 6 years.
Don't even tell me that. Wow.
And if you remember, that was on September 11th. And it was unique because we were sitting there having dinner and having this discussion and start hearing bagpipes out the door. Remember that parade?
I do remember that, but I did not recall that it was September 11th. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Because remember, that's when we went next door and continued talking and you and I started sharing our own experiences. And I think that was something that, you know, kind of cemented our relationship right there.
Agreed.
So, Joe, you know, as we kind of are closing out and getting towards the end of the year here, you know, I just wanted to say once again to everybody to thank Paragon Medical Education Group for all of the things you've done. Literally going on 6 years now, this show exists because of your vision and your thought process that we needed to have this type of discussion on a regular basis to help inform the community about the things they need to keep in mind as the disasters and major events happen in their communities. So if folks want to find out more about what you can do to help show them a different type of training, a different experience that is going to change the way they think about their training evolutions, where can they reach out to you?
Well, thanks so much, Jamie. I really appreciate it. You know, I think it's great to be amongst a bunch of folks that are equally passionate about education and teaching as we all are. And that's why I love this group so much. So, but as far as getting in touch with us, you certainly can find Paragon Medical Group on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com. We also have a Facebook page, Paragon Medical Group. There is always the Disaster Podcast and the Disaster Podcast Facebook page. So you can reach us at any of those locations. We look forward to hearing from you.
Fantastic. And again, people reach out and you won't know what they can do for you until you actually ask the question. So I would say, talk to your training officers. If you are a training officer, reach out to them and start thinking about ways that you can put together a program where you can bring them in. You won't be sorry. Kevin, you're getting ready to head to New Jersey for the holiday, but why don't you tell folks about how they can reach out to you and some of the things you have coming up?
Well, people can reach me on my website, which is wildsafety.com, and links to all of my social media and contact info is there. And this next year is going to be looks like a busy one. I'll be I've got a number of classes scheduled in a couple different states, and getting ready to put my first online course online, hopefully by the end of February. So I'll let you guys know when that's going to be actually announced and released. And I'm thinking it's a pretty cool thing, and it's not just for one particular group. It's for pretty much anybody. And I will drip details more and more as it gets closer to the release date.
I'm looking forward to that, too. I think that's going to be an exciting project, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it. So we'll definitely have you on when it's time to kind of go release that open to the public, because I think our community will be interested in hearing about it.
Awesome. Thanks.
No problem. Sam, how about you?
Well, like Joe said, on the disasterpodcast.com website, social media, you'll find me under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and on the Facebook group. And I'll mimic or echo, that is, what Jamie said about you guys jumping in. Either send me your stories and send me particularly if you're interested in maybe coming on the podcast. It would be great to get more of you engaged and actually talking with us. That would be great fun. So keep an eye on that. I think a lot of the people that may not have seen that yet might jump in because they're off work now. So that's my hope. So what about you, Jamie? Where do we find you?
Well, as people probably know, if you have been listening to the podcast at all over these last going on 6 years, look me up under the handle PodMedic on most social media platforms out there. I always look forward to hearing from you, friend or follow me over there. And also always on our Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast in Facebook, and you can just ask to join the group. We'll let you in, and you're part of that community. We're over 650 strong right now. And, you know, who knows? I'm looking forward to pushing on towards 700, 800 and more. There's plenty of room for more discussion and more community effort as we kind of continue to find out the amazing things that our community has to offer. We've had some great interviews over the last couple of weeks or a couple of months from our community itself. And actually, I got an announcement from our friends Jason Friesen over at Trek Medics. We've had them on several times in the past, and they just recently launched their program to use their software to create an emergency response system in Malawi in Africa, which he talked about briefly on our last program with him. And so I'm looking forward to having him back on. We just have a myriad of resources here that are part of our organization and our group and community here. So become part of it, jump in and join the group. Sam, you know, we it's funny. We talked at the beginning of this, said, well, how are we going to have stuff to talk about? You know, here we are.
We always say
30
that.
Plus minutes later. And I think what was a great episode, because I think it's important for us to be mindful of the things that we have come in contact with to be thankful for.
Exactly. And I'm glad you threw out a shout out for Trek Medics, because those guys do some amazing work, as well as many of the other organizations we've talked to. So, you know, we'll recycle them in every once in a while and hear what they're doing and what they have to say, because they're doing some awesome work out there. But this is just, again, just a different take, yet another different take on the fact that disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.